You're listening to episode 202 of the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
How are you doing, my friends? Guys, I got a very interesting podcast episode for you here today. I got Jeff Watson on this particular masterclass. And so before I tell you a little bit about Jeff and then jump right into the heart of the show, couple things. So number one, we were having some technical difficulties on Skype. And so the audio quality might not be as good as what you're probably used to if you've been listening to the show for a while. But what I want to do is encourage and challenge you to kind of put that aside and make sure that you listen to what Jeff has to talk about on this particular episode, because we're talking about the legal issues that specifically wholesalers need to be aware of and how to go about doing the business in a way that is in compliance so that you avoid any big headaches and issues that you might have in the future. Because, you know, we get into things like cold wholesaling, there reverse wholesaling. There's a lot of that going on. And you know, it's interesting Jeff's response when the word co-wholesaling comes up. And then other things as far as assigning contracts versus double closing. There's just a lot that we get into on this particular episode. We actually even went a little longer than what we typically do, but I didn't want to stop the conversation because it's something that I think you need to hear, because you may be just doing this business the wrong way, you know, and you may be doing things that just aren't legal, knowingly or unknowingly. And so at the very minimum, I wanted to just bring this information and have Jeff Watson come on and talk to you guys about that. So you might think, who's Jeff Watson? Why should I listen to him? Well, number one, he's been an active attorney for the last 25 years or so. He's been a real estate investor since 1993. So he understands both sides. And he's been influential as far as a lot of the laws are concerned that affect real estate investors. You know, he's been on Capitol Hill. He knows a lot of the, you know, a lot of the investigators, a lot of the regulators. Like, he has a personal relationship with these people, and he's influenced a lot of the training that those particular people on Capitol Hill go through. So he just brings a very unique perspective. Again, not only because he's an attorney, but also because he's a real estate investor and he understands our business. He understands what we do, how most people do it, and more importantly, how we need to be doing it to remain in compliance. So, you know, having said that, let's jump right into this episode. And again, guys, try to put aside the audio issues. If it's not that bad, but try to put it aside and listen to what, you know, Jeff and I talk about on this particular masterclass. I appreciate you, and let's jump right into it.
Hey, my friends, awesome to have you back on another masterclass here. And guys, like you just heard in the introduction, this particular podcast episode is very different than some of the other ones that I've done in the past. It's not meant to scare you, but at the same time, it's meant to make sure that if you're going to do this business, you're doing it the right way. You know, there might be things that you're currently doing that you're not even aware are illegal. And so for that reason, I wanted to have Jeff Watson on the phone. Just so you guys know, Jeff and I connected. I've known of Jeff for years now, and I'm going to bring him on in a second here. But, you know, he's worked on Capitol Hill, and he's been a big influencer in a lot of the laws that are changing and affecting real estate investors for the positive. But like I said, you know, you may be doing things currently right now in your business that can get you into trouble, can get you into hot water with regulators and investigators. So while we're not trying to scare you, what we're trying to accomplish is just make you aware of the law and make sure that you guys are doing everything on the up and up. So having said that, Jeff, man, it is awesome to have you on the show, my friend.
My privilege to be here, Alex.
Thank you, buddy. How are you doing?
I am doing far better than I deserve.
I love to hear that, man. I love it. Well, yeah, my friend, it was great to connect with you a couple weeks ago at that wealth building event, and I'm glad we got this scheduled here. So, you know, before we kind of get into the meat and the heart of this particular episode, if you could just kind of fill in some of the gaps, tell people, you know, who you are, and honestly, like, why they should be listening to you, because you're putting out a lot of great content that not very many people that I know are out there speaking on. So if you can just kind of fill in some of those gaps, and then we'll take it from there.
Well, I'm going to hit you with a succinct bio, all right? I am a full-time practicing attorney licensed in the state of Ohio. I am a part-time real estate investor. I've been investing in real estate since January of 1994. I am primarily a buy and hold guy. I do landlording, I do some lending, and then I do a very unique kind of transaction called a Lonnie deal in a mobile home park. We don't need to go down the bunny hole of what that is, but anyhow.
Okay.
In addition to, you know, being a lawyer, in addition to being a real estate investor, I have been blessed to be in the right place at the right time on a number of occasions. In 2007, I came up with in conjunction with some other smart people, came up with a way that we completely revolutionized the way short sale transactions were done. It was such a massive shift and became so powerful that literally Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae changed their underwriting guidelines as a result.
Wow.
Multiple states changed the way that they closed real estate transactions and insured title because of it. And it was great for a long time. And then it got out of hand with people, you know, bastardizing and plagiarizing my stuff and creating, you know, knockoffs and watered down versions.
Yeah.
You know what happens. You know, then it's messy and ugly. So then we had to get to work on Capitol Hill beginning in 2010 to try and clean up some of that mess. And we've been successful in changing the way Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae view and regulate distressed property transactions. We've made a couple of changes there. Had a little bit of influence on extending some of the tax code provisions for, you know, sellers that were underwater. You know, the Mortgage Debt Forgiveness Relief Act, we were able to extend that a couple of times. A lot of other people wanted that done, so, you know, I just want to make people pulling that wagon up the hill. In the state of Ohio, I've got a couple of things that I'm really proud of. We part of a small team that changed the law in the state of Ohio when it relates to better protecting landlords when it comes to unfair accusations of housing discrimination, and also have been very active in influencing in Ohio and at a national level the way that regulators and investigators view and interpret and I'm going to say investigate and regulate wholesaling. And I'm literally engaged in a national conversation on that. I mean, later today, I'm going to be on the phone with a team of people in Utah working on that. I mean, I feel like my fingerprints are not only in Ohio, but in Florida, Texas, now Utah, and other national or other, you know, other states also involved because of some of the access and opportunities that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me tell you, Jeff, man, I guess on my behalf and on the behalf of people listening, I want to acknowledge you. And before we really dive into the heart of this, I really just want to acknowledge you and thank you for the work that you've done on behalf of us as real estate investors, because I don't know a lot of people swinging the bat for us. And if it wasn't for, you know, you and some other people, who knows where the laws would be right now. And so, you know, I hope people that are listening to this particular podcast just know the work that you have put in over the course of several years on behalf of wholesalers and real estate investors. And as you know, man, as the laws continue to change, I mean, you know, you're someone that people need to be following and listening to, because a lot of people are just not as plugged in, obviously, you know, as you are. And so we need to look at you and some others for what's happening in Capitol Hill, what's happening with laws. And like I said at the beginning, at the top of the show, just making sure that we're doing this business the right way. So having said that, what are some of the legal issues that wholesalers, because there's a lot of wholesalers that listen to this particular podcast, what are some of those issues that we need to be made aware of, and how can we go about doing this business the right way?
Oh, sure, dude. That is a wide open question, and thank you for asking it. So I'm going to start by saying this. If you do not have a seat at the table, then you are often what is on the table being carved up and dissected by everybody else. And I have been privileged to be able to help get real estate investors a seat at the table, both in Washington, D.C., and now, on behalf of wholesalers, get them a seat at the table in front of the national regulatory body and there is one. Believe it or not, there is an association of real estate licensed law officials that have jurisdiction over wholesaling. And I'm very pleased to say that some of the information that regulators and investigators from all across America are seeing is stuff that I had the opportunity to collaborate in. You know, video training that I've had the opportunity to collaborate in where we're influencing it. And so the first thing that every wholesaler needs to understand is that you must always act as a principal. You are either the buyer or you are the seller. You are not playing yenta. You are not playing matchmaker. You are not trying to put two people together. You are a principal. You are either buying on your own behalf or you are selling what you own on your own behalf.
Okay,
and
understood.
You've got to make sure that you are always acting for your own account, for your own benefit. That is a mindset that you have to adopt, and then it filters down and impacts every area of your investing wholesaling business.
Okay. So, for example, if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of dive in and dig in a little deeper here. So there's a lot of wholesalers that are listening to the show that are direct-to-seller. So they do marketing, whether it's direct mail or otherwise, and they go and they meet face-to-face or sometimes on the phone with these sellers with the intention of getting the property under contract and then assigning that contract or double closing, essentially having somebody else be the end buyer. What do they need to know as far as what they communicate to that homeowner, and what do they need to do as far as the paperwork is concerned to make sure that they're acting as a principal?
Well, the first thing is their marketing says, I buy houses. I assume that that's the fundamental piece of information in their marketing, right?
Usually, yes.
Okay, so whether you say it by bandit sign, postcards, you know, SEO, whatever, you know, you're saying I buy houses, I pay cash, I close quickly. Well, then let's do something. Why don't we become a person of our word? Why don't we buy the house? Why don't we act?
What a concept, right?
Yeah, it's audacious, isn't it? I mean, you know, let's just do what we said we're going to do. Buy the house. You know, mm-hmm. So, and now listen, I understand. I get it. Sometimes you're going to say, listen, Jeff, I can't buy them all because I don't have enough of a rehab crew to do 5 projects at once. I got you. But let's at least put the house under contract at a price that would make sense for you to be able to buy it, fix it up, and resell it. Because if it makes mm-hmm. sense for you to be able to buy and fix it up and resell it at the price you put it under contract, then maybe, just maybe, you could sell that contract to somebody else.
Yeah, right.
Okay? Now, when you used a phrase a little bit ago that I really loved, and you said it so quickly, right in the middle of a sentence, and you used the phrase double close. I love double closes.
You and I both. Yep.
Dude, I embrace that. I want everybody in the wholesaling community, everybody in the wholesaling world, to begin to wrap their arms around double closing. And when I say double closing, that means you may buy it on Monday morning and sell it on Tuesday afternoon. You may buy it on Monday morning and you may sell it a week later, 10 days later. Maybe you're lucky enough that you got a really good system in place and you've got a really strong cash buyer and you've got, you know, so maybe there's some things in your state that kind of let it slide a little bit easier, like the state of Texas is a lot easier to do business in than some other states, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can buy it on Monday morning and sell it on Monday morning, the same day, yep. same hour. I don't know, but great. But I'm going to tell you something right now. When the chairman of the committee that is for the National Organization of Real Estate Licensed Law Officials, when she looked at me the other day and she said to me, Jeff, when they buy it and then they quickly resell it, we don't consider that wholesaling. We call that flipping, and flipping is fine.
Love it. Man, I'm telling you, I'm so glad to hear you say this, because for years there's so many educators and gurus, whatever you want to call them, out there teaching assigning contracts, and man, we have been double closing for as long as I can remember. And people that I work with, people I talk to, I've always advised, it's just cleaner if you can double close. Especially if you're making significant amount of money. You know, you're making a couple thousand dollars. I want to listen to and defer to you as to how to legally assign a contract. But if you're assigning most of your deals, that's an issue, I think. And I think that's kind of where you were going to go.
Exactly. Let me ask you this question. If you've got a deal that you put under contract and then you come to realize that, whoa, maybe the best thing I can do with this thing is either walk away from my earnest money, lose my couple hundred to $500 earnest money. That's another topic we'll get to. Or maybe I can assign someone else who I can assign this contract to in exchange for a couple grand. I'm going to tell you right now, that's a skinny deal. What are you doing with skinny deal?
Yeah.
You know, figure out where you made your mistake. Did you overestimate comps? Did you underestimate repairs? Did you make too high of an offer? What'd you do? You know, but that's not a business model, man. You and I both know that. You know, assigning contracts for a couple grand is not a business model.
Right.
That's a rat wheel, man. That's a hamster on a wheel. You know.
Yep.
That don't work. So anyhow. You know, let's dig into this a little bit deeper, because whether, you know, and people are going to come to me and they're going to go, but Jeff, but Alex, I don't have the money to be able to fund my closing. Oh, please don't tell me that story. Does that mean that you're not adequately prepared to do this business? Does that mean that you really don't have the money? Does that mean that you don't have the resources to go out and tap private lenders or hard money or transactional funders? Does that mean to tell me that you entered into a contract not in good faith, that you entered into a contract without the ability to perform? Are you telling me that you're engaging in fraud? You know, that you deceived the seller by saying, listen, I pay cash, I put your property under contract, but I don't have the money to close.
Mm-hmm.
So you're lying to the public and you're lying to the seller, and next thing I know, you're in trouble, man. You know, I'm waiting to see Uncle Rico come down on a couple of these people, you know, as in Racketeering Influencing Corrupt Organizations Act.
Wow.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to tell you right now, everybody listening to us needs to hit the backup button about three times and go back and listen to the last minute or what we just said.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, I knew this wasn't going to necessarily be a popular topic, and hopefully people just continue to tune in, because this is the type of stuff that can just not only save your business, but, like, have you avoid some serious headaches down the road.
Headaches that they can avoid. Well, you know, and here's the part that's really crazy. And this, Alex, you're going to love this when I tell you this. I have been beating on the drum of double closing for 3 years now with a number of my wholesaling clients. And I'm privileged and I'm blessed to have some of the nation's smartest and best wholesalers as clients. And God's honest truth, if you took them all together and you added their businesses all together, my collective client base probably flips three houses a day, 360 days a year.
Incredible.
Okay? So that means that my clients, the people that listen to me, flip over 1,000 houses a year.
A ton of volume.
I got clients from San Diego, California, to the Atlantic coast of Florida, to Boston, Massachusetts, Portland, Oregon, and everywhere in between. Okay? Let's just be clear about this, folks. I got clients in the Midwest, I got clients in the South, the East, the North, you name it, I got them, all right? And every one of them that has moved to double closing has come back to me and said, you know what, Jeff, now that we've started double closing deals, we have discovered two things. Number one, we can do fewer deals and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that concept, Alex. Doing fewer deals, i.e. less brain damage, less expenses, less operational headaches, fewer buyers, fewer pain-in-the-butt sellers, fewer pain-in-the-butt assinees, okay, and more money.
That's right. I'm with you, man. I'm totally with you. I just think it's a cleaner deal all the way around.
Oh, it completely is. It completely is. But here's the part that really people don't get. And if you don't believe me, and if you're like, oh, Jeff, you're just blowing smoke, you're trying to scare people, whatever, I'm going to tell you this. I got a simple question for you. When is the last time that you, Mr. Listener, Ms. Listener, sat down and read your own state's real estate license laws, particularly the definition of a real estate broker? Because if you've never
before,
you've never been asked that question, you've never done it.
Man, I'd venture to say maybe a couple out of 100.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, you read that definition and you're going to realize that you're breaking the law. Because unless you're a licensed agent, unless you're a broker, an agent, a realtor, whatever it is in your state that we call it, you cannot be doing this activity but for your own benefit. And the only way to clearly, conclusively, consistently establish that you're doing it for your own benefit, for your own account, for your own profit, is to be both a buyer, buy the property, and then sell it. Double close.
So hopefully that's kind of resonating with people, because again, I couldn't agree with you more as far as double closing versus refining. You touched on something that I was going to ask you here. Do you recommend that people get licensed as real estate agents in their city or state?
No, I don't recommend it.
Okay.
It's not
okay.
required.
Can you talk a little about that?
I think actually becoming a licensed agent for, excuse me, I still got this nasty cough.
No, you're good.
Becoming a licensed agent, probably more often than not, if you're strictly in the business of buying and quickly reselling, adds a layer of regulatory complexity that you don't necessarily need.
Okay.
Now, if you're in the business of buying and then fixing and then reselling, rehabbing, you know, that kind of stuff, then becoming a licensed agent is probably going to be an advantage.
Got it.
But if you're just concerned with things, then I don't see a compelling need to become a licensed agent.
What about for those people that are wholesaling and are already agents? What would you say to them to just make sure that they avoid any issues?
The first thing I would tell them is that in every piece of marketing, every communication that proceeds in writing out of them in any way, shape, or form, always discloses that that they're a licensed agent.
Okay.
Okay. But they're acting on their, Joe Blow is, let's use an example here, okay? We're just going to make up the name of a company. You've got a house buying, house flipping company called Ajax Homes, okay? Mm-hmm. Ajax Homes LLC. And make sure that somewhere it says in clear, easy to read language that one or more owners of Ajax Homes is a licensed real estate agent. But Ajax Homes and this person are acting for their own interest.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, so that's the first step, is you're disclosing in your marketing materials that you're an agent.
Right, and then make sure you put it in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you put it in the contract when you buy. Make sure you put it in the contract when you sell.
Yep.
And make sure if you're not selling the house, if you're assigning the contract, because there's still a few occasions when an assignment may make sense, okay? And I'll give you an idea. And this is like splitting the bunny trail here. If your profit spread is $10,000 or less,
an assignment
is probably an okay thing. But please, 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 have a track record of double closing on the stuff with bigger spreads.
There you go.
You have to have a track record. I mean, if your spread's $18,000, $19,000, $20,000, double close it. Unless you're in Cook County, Chicago. Because if you're in Cook County, Illinois, and Chicago, you need to probably go, I'm going to say somewhere between $15,000 and $17,000 is where your assignment fee ceiling is. And above that, you want to double close it, because just the cost of doing a double closing in Cook County is stupid. It really is.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, see, this is why, because I got clients all over this great, wonderful, amazing country called America. This is why I know this kind of stuff. you know, and they come to me and they go, Jeff, you would not believe what it costs to double close in Chicago. And I'm like, okay, wow. So we just skew the number up. Instead of 10,000, we'll go to 18,000, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But the profit spreads are bigger in Chicago, man. I mean, Chicago's been one of my favorite cities to invest in the last 6 years. I mean, I've done really well in that town. So
that's awesome. That's one of the unique things about having you on is that not only are you a practicing attorney for the last 20 plus years, but you're also an investor for a long time, and so you understand, you know, you understand both sides of it. And while this may like just kind of scare the shit out of people, you know, just to be totally direct, would you rather bury your head in the sand or just at least know, you know, what the laws are, how to remain in compliance, and then, you know, do what you got to do to just make sure that you can avoid these issues down the road? Well, having said that, Jeff, what are some of the other mistakes that you're seeing wholesalers make?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest mistakes that I see wholesalers making. I got three categories, okay?
Yeah.
When you have a contractual interest in a house, you've got a contract to buy the house, okay? You do not own the house. You may or you may not have some degree of an equitable interest in the property, depending upon the laws of your state and depending upon the contingencies in the contract and depending upon how much earnest money you've got down and so on. I'm not going to get into all that rabbit hole. But
yeah.
You don't own the house yet, so don't advertise and market the house. Advertise
you market the contract.
The contract.
There you go. I want to say I heard somewhere a while back that you were you the one, I don't know if I'm giving you the right credit or if it was, but was it you that kind of put quote unquote marketing the contract on the map? I want to say I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it started with the private consultation I did with some really smart guys that taught wholesaling out of the, let's just call it the Mid-South, near the Mississippi.
Okay.
I'm not going to name any names. I'm not going to give away any cities, but some really nice, smart guys that they freaked out when I made them read their state's definition of the real estate broker, and they realized how much they were doing wrong, and they realized pretty quickly that, you know, what they were doing was wrong, what they were teaching their students was illegal, and they had to change, and they did, and that's where marketing the contract came from, and it kind of, you know, snowballed from there. Next thing you knew, everybody and their brothers talking about marketing the contract again, you know?
Got it. So when you say just marketing the contract, a lot of wholesalers will send out the address of a property. They'll include pictures. They'll include, you know, details about the property, et cetera. How do they need to be doing this the right way as far as marketing the contract is concerned?
Okay, so we're going to divide this down in a couple of categories here. If you're in the state of Texas, Texas has passed some legislation and amended their administrative code that lets you act like you market the house but clearly disclose you only have a contract on it. Texas is an exception. Texas has done something nice, you know, but they've kind of codified some of the stuff that I've taught and kind of then made it a little more lenient. So thumbs up to Texas there, okay?
Okay.
Everywhere else, I would tell you that you have to split this thing down the middle. You have to go, okay, whatever is being generated by me that can go to anybody, random public communication, i.e. Craigslist, Facebook, website, mass email, wherever, okay, something that has the ability to be forwarded and shared and all that other stuff, you need to be very clear that you have a contract for sale, and you can describe it as saying, I have under contract, the contract is for sale, a three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,800-square-foot colonial in the Williamsburg subdivision. For more info, contact me.
Got it.
Okay?
No pictures, nothing else.
No, but what have you told them? You've told them the general idea where it is. You've told them what kind of deal it is. And if they want to know more, they can contact you privately. And guess what? In the private communication, what are they going to want to know? They're going to want to see the contract.
Address. Yeah, sure.
What's the fundamental element of the contract? The address.
The address. Mm-hmm.
So let's not get all wrapped around this. How difficult it is. Now let's not get all wrapped around that axle because it doesn't work. Now there is, and I've had this debate and this conversation, and I can tell you there is a split opinion in the mindset of regulators across America. And I'm not going to tell you who's where and what. I'm not going into that, okay? That's privileged stuff that I know and only I know. But there's a split in the mindset of regulators across America. Remember, these are the government officials that look at what wholesalers do and decide whether or not to make their life miserable, and justifiably so in many cases. There's a split of opinion as to when you have a private buyer's list of people that you know are not going to be resharing this, not going to be trying to pimp your deal with putting their markup on it, which is a completely illegal process called co-wholesaling that I despise. That whole process. If you've got a private buyer's list of people that you've vetted that you know they can perform, then go ahead and in that private communication, you can give them more information. Okay?
Understood.
But it's got to be clear.
Okay.
Contract for sale, do not share this with anyone else. Confidential information, etc. Come on, you're a smart enough marketer. You know how to make it seem like they're getting a really good deal on an inside angle. You know what I mean?
Sure, of course. Well, man, I don't want to poke the bear here, but I'm going to do it anyway. Tell me how you really feel about co-wholesaling, and then if you can get into that a little bit, because I think
you poke the bear, dude, and I'm just going to say it like it is, okay?
I see this everywhere.
I've looked at the slide deck prepared by investigators. I know what they teach inside their seminars, where they train each other. They think that co-wholesaling and reverse wholesaling are illegal because you're not doing it the right way according to the state law regarding, and it all goes back to, look at the definition of a real estate broker. Let's face it, every state has decided decades ago, we're going to put laws on the books as to who can and can't buy and sell real estate under what circumstances. And every state says that you can do it as for your own benefit, for your own account, for as a principal, and so on. But when you start doing it for another, when you start advertising somebody else's house, when you start advertising somebody else's deal that you don't own, that you're not on the contract to buy, that you're not a member of the LLC that has the contract to buy it, that there is no written joint venture agreement acknowledged by the seller, then you're pimping a deal that you don't have a piece of, and you're a pimp. You're doing it illegally, and you need to stop.
So let me dig a little deeper here. One of the things that I know several wholesalers here in my area do, and I don't know if this is the right way, the wrong way, if it's legal, if it's not, I'll let you kind of just let me know if this is the right way to do it. A lot of these people that quote unquote co-wholesale, they will get other people to sign a document that essentially gives them, I don't want to use the word equitable interest, but it doesn't make them a partner in the deal. It gives them permission. Like, so in other words, if wholesaler A has a property under contract, and let's just assume that person has the ability to close, and they're going to double close, and they're going to go through that, the correct channel. And then they sign a document that gives wholesaler B permission to market the contract, let's say. Is that legal or is that illegal?
Did wholesaler B pay anything to wholesaler A for the right?
No.
Does wholesaler B have any skin in the game, in the deal?
No.
Then it's not legal.
Got it. Okay.
If they've got money into the deal, if they put up half the earnest money, if they're prepared to pay for half the money for the closing costs, you know, to do the front end of the back-to-back closing, then yeah, okay, cool. We're looking good now, you know?
Understood. So they got to have skin in the game, whether it's a deposit or...
They got to have skin in that deal. not just some piece of paper that says, oh, I as wholesaler B can pimp out and market any of wholesaler A's deals, anything that they've got, anything that they get now or from the next 6 months. No. Get your name in the deal.
Yeah.
That deal.
Yeah.
Put yourself on that contract.
Understood.
How about this? How about wholesaler B and wholesaler A get together and form a joint venture and use that joint venture entity to be the buying entity for the two of them? Maybe wholesaler A is really good at getting deals under contract, but absolutely sucks at marketing them.
Yeah.
And wholesaler B can't get a deal under contract to save their life, but man, they give them a good deal. They're great at marketing it.
Yeah, which is pretty common, by the way.
Then, hey,
yeah.
Work together, but put it on paper in writing that says so that when a regulator or an investigator sends a subpoena out, you've got it. Says, hey, listen, you know, back on April 2nd, 2017, we agreed that for the next year, we're going to work together on these deals, and accordingly, we formed JV Enterprises LLC, and JV Enterprises LLC put all these properties under contract.
Mm-hmm.
And we each put $10,000 into the pot of JV LLC.
Okay. Jeff, let me ask you, if I have a contract on a property and I market the contract and some random wholesaler in my market takes that property or takes the copy of my email that I'm marketing the contract and then they do what they will with it, is there any liability to me for somebody that I don't know and or doesn't have any skin in that deal? Is there any liability to me?
There's no liability to you, but you've got a couple of things that you should do. There's two things I suggest that you do.
Uh-huh.
The first thing I suggest that you do is that you report that person to your state division of real estate. The second thing I suggest that you do is that you use a different phone number and call that person up and say, yeah, I'll buy the property. I want it. Send me a contract. So think this thing through, Alex, because, Alex, I've had this happen multiple times with clients of mine, whether they're in Alabama, Wisconsin, or anywhere else, okay? It's hilarious. It is so much fun to do this because the legit wholesaler that's got the deal under contract sees somebody else is pimping their deal without their permission, call that pimp up and go, yeah, I'll pay you $29,000 for that thing more than what I already have it under contract for, whatever they're pimping it for, okay? Mm-hmm. Send me a contract. Need it today. Okay? So you know what the pimp's going to do, right? They're
going to
go try and get the deal back under contract, and guess who they're going to run into?
Yeah.
And then that's when you can drop the hammer on them and go, hey, buddy, I've already reported you to the Division of Real Estate. I suggest you don't ever do it again, particularly on any of my deals.
Hmm. Got it. Man, so what we're talking about here goes on in practically every city, probably. I know it happens in my market. And I think what's unfortunate is that there's so many people that aren't even aware they're doing something illegal, right?
And wholesaling has such a, regrettably, it has such a low barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing I'm going to tell you about wholesaling, and I'm going to be just flat out straight, okay? Back when I was in law school, okay? Back when Al Gore was still inventing the internet, okay? Back before smartphones existed, okay? So this is, you know, late 80s, maybe 1990, okay? I went to a seminar on real estate investing. And to this day, I can still remember some of the stuff that speaker was teaching. And my mind goes back to what he was teaching about wholesaling, and I'm going back, man, even then, what he was teaching was wrong. Based upon the laws as I knew they were written, you know, as I now know how they were written, they're like, it's wrong. It's illegal.
Yeah.
But they teach it with such enthusiasm and such confidence, and it makes it sound so easy, and it's such a quick way to make money that you never stop and go, well, wait a second, I need to check this out a little bit. And so then you've got people who back that far ago were teaching wholesaling illegally, and people that learn from them and develop better little systems and strategies, they're just building on that layer of ignorance. So you've got layer of ignorance on layer of ignorance on layer of ignorance, with no one ever going back and drilling down to the foundational stuff and going, hey, what does the state statutes really say about this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much momentum is this picking up with as far as regulators and investigators are concerned? I mean, have there been any cases of wholesalers like getting into some serious issues as a result, or is this something that you see this happening like moving forward now?
So what happens is there's been some serious cases. There's been some serious cases, and regrettably, they've been too isolated, in my opinion. There needs to be a world of hurt brought down on a bunch of people. I can't do it, which is regrettable. I'd love to, but I can't. What I'm seeing, though, and there's two things that happen, is most people get, and this is how this game usually goes. Most people are being investigated for 18 months to 24 months before they even know they're the subject of an investigation.
Oh, wow.
Because how the investigators work is they'll get a tip, they'll start looking at everything they can publicly, they'll find out where the deals are closing, they'll get all the information from the title and escrow people, they'll then start communicating with the sellers, and sometimes the sellers will leak back to the buyer what's happening. But I've had clients that literally didn't get the subpoena letter for their own records until 2 years after the complaint against them was filed.
Ouch.
And so a lot of people, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there running around right now that are under investigation and they don't even know it.
So, Jeff, for people that have been doing the business the wrong way, they listen to this podcast and they make a commitment to be in compliance moving forward. Is there just, I'm guessing there's no way to look back and undo what you've already done. So for those people, is the advice just make sure that going forward you do the business the right way? I mean, is can they?
Sure. That's a great question, Alex, and I'm so glad you asked it. That is a powerful and important question. Number one is you've got to educate yourself so that you start doing it correctly. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've seen this play out multiple times in more than one state where when a wholesaler gets their act cleaned up and starts doing it the right way before they find out that they're a target of an investigation,
okay,
that if the investigation later pops out on them, and they can then go in and I've helped them do this, they go in and they go, you know what, you're completely right, I was wrong, I wasn't doing it right, but you can see that even before I knew you guys were looking at me, I got educated, I got trained, and I started doing it the correct way, and I promise you I won't ever do it again the way that you don't like. Now, how do we make this right? But going forward, you can already see what I'm doing. And
that's awesome. Okay.
I have seen this happen now in multiple states. They get a much fairer, kinder treatment.
Okay.
But I've also seen it where when they come after you and you flip them the finger and blow them off and say, no, I'm not doing anything wrong, and you act all defiant, dude, that is the worst thing you can do. I have seen it now result in major investigations. They bring in the feds, and they will crush you.
So, last couple questions, Jeff, as we start to kind of wind down here. If somebody finds himself...
Does that keep scaring people?
Yeah, I just want to be respectful of your time, man. But, I mean, this has just been really, really insightful, I'm sure, for a lot of people. But if somebody kind of finds himself on the wrong end of a phone call from an investigator, a regulator, somebody, you know, basically just asking odd questions and digging in, what do you recommend that person do?
I recommend that they do three things. Number one, hire counsel immediately. Number two,
what kind of counsel exactly?
They need to hire somebody that knows the real estate rules in their state. They've got to find somebody who is very proficient in understanding not only what they do as a business, but also very proficient in understanding the way that that state operates as far as investigations and enforces the law under their definition of real estate broker and the real estate licensure laws. Mm-hmm. There's not many of us out there. The second thing that they need to do is they need to immediately stop doing whatever they think they're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They need to don't lie and don't destroy your records. Don't you dare go back in and start cleaning files and purging records and, you know, changing out hard drives and all that. Don't you dare do that.
That's just not smart.
That screams Watergate cover-up, man.
Nice.
Don't you dare do that.
Okay.
A lot of times the cover-up is worse than the actual crime, you know?
Yeah,
We've seen that how many times now in America? And so
just,
you know, get counsel. Stop doing what's wrong. Don't cover up. Don't try and recreate an alternative history. And, you know, be prepared to spend some money on, you know, coming to a resolution on this thing.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Okay. Well, hey, man, last question I want to toss your way. It's kind of an oddball question. It didn't really go with the flow of the call, but it was brought up a couple times, and so I want to just, I don't want to leave people hanging. You brought up deposits on contracts. Really quickly, what do you recommend? Because there's people that teach put $10 on a contract, and there's others that will say, well, no, I'll put $100. You know, what do you recommend as far as
wholesalers are concerned? I like to keep between $200 and $500.
Okay.
I like to see between $200 and $500 made payable to the title and escrow company, and I want to see that money going into escrow with the contract probably within 48 hours of acceptance by all parties of the final contract. Get some
understanding.
Okay? Because I'm going to tell you right now, that is something that investigators look at. And if you're doing that, they're going to start going, oh, this guy's taking this business seriously. They're probably doing it right.
Perfect. Jeff, this has been great, man. Where can people connect with you if anybody wants to maybe consult with you or find out, you know, connect offline and find out more about what you have going on?
Sure. And I will give them a website that they can go to. And it's called WatsonInvested.com. It's all one word, WatsonInvested, WATSON, my last name, invested, INVESTED.com. WatsonInvested.com. There's a plethora of information, too much information on that blog page. There's great videos on wholesaling. There's some great videos on some other stuff. And there's the easy, simple way to click a couple of buttons and fill out a form and contact me.
Perfect. Beautiful, man. And guys, we'll have WatsonInvested.com in the show notes page and some of the other resources that that Jeff may have mentioned on the episode. So, beautiful, man. Again, I appreciate the time. This maybe didn't have the positive spin that we typically have on the show, but nonetheless, I think it's important that people hear it because if we can at least, you know, save one person at the very minimum from, you know, potentially having issues down the road, then it's totally worth it. So, I appreciate the knowledge.
Alex, it's been a privilege to be here, and I'm just gonna comment on that, on the observation you made there, okay? If you're looking for someone to pat you on the back and whisper words of encouragement to you and tell you that you can do it, I'm not your guy. If you're looking for somebody that when the world gets really ugly and crappy, you need somebody that's been there, fought through it, and knows how to do it, I'm the dude you want. Because I've been there, I've taken things through there, and I know what it takes because I'm the guy that you want in the foxhole when the bombs start falling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the guy that you want to be telling you how beautiful the green grass is.
Yeah.
You with me?
Well, it's like you said, if you're about to get into a battle or a fight, you know, what kind of person do you want in the foxhole with you? You know, so I get it, man. I get it. So hey man, this has been awesome. It's been very insightful. Hopefully it's resonated with people out there, especially wholesalers that, you know, that just maybe doing things they weren't even aware of. And so guys, there's nothing you can do about, you know, what you've done in the past, but now take this information and make the modifications and tweaks in your business to just make sure that you're doing things the right way. You know, I think one of the things that Jeff shared 5 minutes ago about just showing your the new way that you're doing business should be refreshing to a lot of people out there. So, you know, no point in looking back, but just understand some of the mistakes and then make those corrections and move forward. I mean, this is a fantastic business, but just make sure that you're doing it on the up and up. So, Jeff, well, again, buddy, I appreciate
it. It is, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to hit this point again. If they really listen to what you and I told them, or if they go back and listen to it again, you and I told them, here's a way of doing this business where you will make more money and have less brain damage.
Mm-hmm. Double close.
Does anybody want to argue with making more money and having less brain damage?
I don't think so.
Yeah. And you and I told them that, so let's hope that they do it, okay?
Beautiful. Thank you, guys. Jeff, appreciate you, buddy. We'll be in contact, okay?
All right, Alex. Thank you so much, man. My privilege. Peace. I'm out.
Thanks. Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.